This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello, and welcome to the first Market Talk episode of 2025, where today we'll be discussing the shift in US interest rate expectations, the factors behind the recent rise in UK gilt yields, and whether earnings season can give investors something to feel cheerful about. I'm Harry Brooks, and today I'm joined by Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy for Asia, who joins us from Hong Kong. Welcome back to Market Talk, Ben. Last time we caught up, you admitted your slightly patchy track record as a buyer of Christmas presents. Did you do any better this time round, and did Santa bring you anything good?
And it actually was worse than last year. Last year, my gift was taken back for a refund. This time, yes. We decided to get each other matching toothbrushes. I don't think it can get any worse than that, can it, next year? But we'll see.
Matching toothbrushes, excellent. Okay, well, without any further ado, move on swiftly from Christmas presents. Let's get into it. The big story in financial markets last week was that rise in government bond yields, which accelerated following the release of some very strong jobs numbers out of the US on Friday, as well as some other data pointing to economic strength. Some of the reporting following that jobs report gave the impression that we could be at a turning point of sorts, quoting analysts who said the rate cutting cycle could be over, and if we get some more evidence of inflationary pressure, then the conversation should be turning to rate hikes now. I wonder if you can give us some broader context here. It feels like the mood has really shifted since last time we caught up.
The broader context is actually that it's been going on really since the Fed cut interest rates, in terms of yields have been going up almost to the day that the Fed cut, which is a little bit counterintuitive, isn't it? If you'd have thought the Fed would be cutting. But that's because it's all about what was driving that Fed cut and then what has happened since. So if you remember around the Fed cut in September, this is back in September, that was on the back of some weak data, actually, funnily enough, weak jobs data. So investors were worried that growth was slowing, that therefore the Fed would have to cut loads. You know, remember the Fed cut 50 basis points. They were quite worried. So that led to yields going down. But almost, like I said, to the day, maybe a couple of weeks later, the data started to get a bit better. So that weak job number that we had just before the Fed cut was demonstrated to be a bit of a one-off. And then, of course, we had the election focus, Donald Trump winning the election. The initial perception was, of course, that, you know, that would be potentially lower taxes, deregulation, all these sort of pro-growth things. So the better data was then hit with another wave of maybe we're going to get better growth going forward. Just more recently, we've had a little bit of the more ambiguous Trump policies being discussed. So the tariffs potentially going up, immigration being controlled. Whether or not that's good for growth is questionable, but, you know, in terms of inflation prospects, that could be upwards for that, couldn't it? Which would also send yields higher. So over that entire period, let's take the end of September as the anchor points, and yesterday, we're recording this on Tuesday, so let's just take Monday the 13th of January's close. So the 10-year US bond yield was at 3.8% back in September, closed yesterday at 4.8%. So that's, you know, that's up 100 basis points over that period. So it's a decent amount, not a huge amount, but it is a decent amount. And that has translated into fewer rate cuts being priced in for this year. So I mentioned the Fed did 50 basis points, they've since cut again. In markets, market pricing, there's basically just one more rate cut priced in this year, maybe one and a bit. Not yet in the hikes. You mentioned hikes. I don't think that's yet there, is it? But, you know, only one rate cut being required because this data has been relatively good. We just got some decent, as you said, some decent jobs data this week. So that's underlining that fact that perhaps the Federal Reserve has done just about enough and maybe can pause next time they meet, which is on the 29th of January. So maybe that will be the first pause that we get.
Okay, you touched on this momentarily, but sticking with that theme of turning points, Monday will mark the beginning of a new chapter in US politics when Donald Trump is inaugurated as president. What are markets telling us about expectations of the early days of the second Trump presidency? Is it still a question of waiting to see how rhetoric and reality compare?
Well, there's a lot of uncertainty. I mean, that's basically the best. And I don't think that uncertainty will go away on the 20th. So a lot of the things that he's said that he will do in terms of tariffs, in terms of restricting immigration, even deportations, you know, that can be done relatively quickly. Whether or not he decides to do it quickly is another point. I mean, there's been lots of headlines in the press about his potential tariff policy. Maybe they'll drip feed some of them in. Maybe there'll be threats and then some negotiations. Honestly, who knows? It's pretty hard to describe that. I'd say that the clearer policies for pro-growth in terms of tax cuts, deregulation, that generally takes a little bit longer. So maybe you're gonna see more of the immigration, more of the tariffs early on, and then the really sort of pro-growth deregulation stuff a little bit later. But again, that's just a guess. We're all guessing here. We are starting to see already some of the Senate hearings for what will be President Trump's government, in effect, some of his team, secretaries of state, et cetera, you know, the defense secretary, etc. All these, they're going to be going through the Senate hearings. So we'll start to see already just how robust the Republican majority is in the Senate and how easily President Trump is going to get his way in terms of who he wants in his team. So that's already interesting. I'd say actually, funny enough, I mean, we're recording this on Tuesday, that maybe even more important over the short term, at least, will be tomorrow when we're going to get CPI inflation data for the US. So I mentioned that we got decent jobs growth data, and that the reason why yields are going up on the back of that is because maybe that leads to higher wage growth. But more immediately, you know, what is inflation doing right now? I think that's going to be probably the focus, at least this week, for markets. And then we'll focus our attention on Donald Trump next week and what he does straight away after he's been inaugurated.
Okay, another country that's seen big moves in its government bond market recently is the UK, where gilt yields have been approaching multi-decade highs. To what extent are these moves just mirroring those that we're seeing in US treasuries versus how much of it is UK-specific factors, would you say?
Let's take a step back, actually, because, yeah, you're right. There's been a bit of focus on the UK, and certainly, you know, as a UK domiciled asset manager, we've been seeing some big moves in the gilt market that we've been trading. But like I said, let's take a step back. So I mentioned before that US yields have been going up. That generally pushes up global yields, because ultimately, if you're an investor in the UK, you can choose where you want to put your money. So maybe if yields are going up in the US, you sell some gilts and you buy some US treasuries, and that ultimately would also send UK yields higher, won't it? So they've been going up in sympathy. The other big move that's been going on has been that the dollar has been strengthening. And that's a function, again, of maybe the US sucking in or attracting some money. And also, if there are tariffs being put in place, that would usually be the reaction of currency markets. If you put tariffs up, your currency generally goes up to compensate for that. So you take the US DXY, the US dollar DXY index, that is up 9% since the end of September. I mentioned before that September date for yields. That's the same for the dollar. So 9%, that's a decent move, isn't it? And it's also up this year as well. So it's up sort of over 1% so far this year too. So that also has led to currencies elsewhere, including the pound, but elsewhere as well, falling. So it's a general pattern that we have seen. What is going on is that the US growth has been strong. The Federal Reserve is assumed to put policy or apply policy for that US strength. So we're talking about potentially more hawkish policy. That's the reason why yields have been going up. That's okay for US domestic policy, but the rest of the world, we've got to suffer, haven't we, that policy. So if perhaps other parts of the world are not doing quite so well, like the UK, but we're still taking on board these high yields because they're pushing up this stronger dollar, which is tightening lending conditions. And ultimately, it does expose vulnerable countries that perhaps have, you know, like the UK, we've got big deficit, we've got a big fiscal deficit, we spend more than we gain in taxes. The current account deficit in the UK is also pretty large. So stuff that the UK sells isn't the same as what it imports. Ultimately, the UK needs foreigners to fund them. They need foreigners to buy gilts a lot. And And if this time when the funding conditions have been squeezed a bit, if there's some doubts or some concern about UK growth, which has been in the headlines, hasn't it? Then you start to see these wobbles. And the UK, therefore, has been in the headlines. But when it boils down to actually how much the market has moved, it's pretty much in line with a lot of other countries. So the Treasury market, I mentioned before, from September to yesterday, 10-year Treasury yields went up from 3.8 to 4.8. Gilt yields went up from 4.0 to 4.9. So that's about the same. It's not a million miles different. But it does at times just lead to some particularly big volatility. It's not just the UK. We've seen that in France, haven't we? We've also seen volatility in France over the last few weeks. Seen it in Brazil. Again, countries that have some vulnerabilities due to fiscal deficits and also some headlines due to, you know, concerns about growth. It's all the same thing. I wouldn't say it's a panic, though. It's more just this squeeze from the dollar funding conditions.
I think that currency angle is really interesting. I'm thinking about investors who might have sterling denominated portfolios. What practical effects will they have seen of this period of sterling weakness relative to the dollar?
Yeah, that's right. It's an interesting phenomenon. So if you're a foreigner and you've been buying UK assets, so if you're a US dollar denominated foreigner buying UK assets, then yeah, you've been hit by the fact that the sterling has been weaker. Ultimately, like I said, it's really that the dollar's been stronger. You've been given that, that's negative for you. So that's been the case in September. It's accelerated a little bit this year. The pound versus the dollar is about 3% lower this year as of Monday's close. It's good news for UK Inc, I suppose, you know, people who are trying to sell stuff out of the UK. You know, the weaker sterling means that your things that you're selling are getting cheaper for foreigners to buy. So you're getting a little bit more competitive, aren't you? But it is also really interesting for a UK asset owner, whether or not they decide to hedge some of their foreign exposure. So, you know, if you've bought some US treasuries, for example, US stocks, you've actually benefited, haven't you, from the fact that the pound is weaker, the dollars that you've bought, they've been better, unless you've hedged. You could also hedge that exposure. And it is a really complicated topic. What sort of assets you should hedge? What are the different things that they are hedging? You're actually hedging a bit of inflation risk as a UK asset owner. If you buy external assets and don't hedge them, it's a bit of an inflation hedge. But it is complicated. There's actually a piece that we're writing, aren't we, that's going to come out in the next couple of weeks by our colleague John Southall, who's going to be talking about this FX hedging, which is worth digging into actually in a little bit more detail. But I won't go into it here because it is complicated. But yeah, that piece will reveal all.
Yeah, look forward to reading that one. So we've talked quite a bit about bonds now. So I wonder if we can turn to equities. After a knockout 2024, the S&P 500, the big US index, hasn't really found much direction so far this year. With the Q4 earnings season just getting underway, what are analysts expecting? Could this be a source of positivity in what feels like a bit of a gloomy patch for markets generally?
Yeah, the S&P 500 has been about as successful in terms of Christmas presents as I have been. So since the end of November, the S&P 500 is down up until, again, yesterday, Monday's close, down just over 3%, 3.3%. So far this year, down nearly 1%. So no Santa rally. Everyone talks about Santa rally. It was the sort of Santa fizzle out. It's my sort of Santa rally. Look, that the tightening of U.S. conditions, credit conditions, that higher yields, that stronger dollar, that's generally not good for risky assets. For US in particular, it's okay because it's like I had mentioned before, that policy is focused on US domestic economic backdrop, which is doing okay. So it should be okay, but ultimately it does weigh a little bit. Equity investors like it when yields are going down, and you know that means that borrowing is cheap, so you can lever up and make more money. They like it when the dollar's a bit weaker because ultimately, like I said before, you're more competitive if you're exporting stuff. So the opposite way around isn't great. Now we do have an earnings season which is starting this week, so we've got the big US banks are starting. I think Wednesday, a few of them are announcing results. And the forecasts, so the analyst expectations for earnings season on aggregate for the S&P 500 is that earnings will be up sort of 10% or so. I mean, pretty more than 10% versus Q4 last year. So Q4, I guess, 2023. So the annual increases earnings over 10%, which is pretty strong. So you've got that macro headwind, which we've been describing an awful lot about. But then you've got this micro bottom-up. Companies are still doing fine, thank you very much. So maybe that will, as you say, that at least will refocus attention. Maybe this sort of weak Christmas period and the start of the year, maybe that'll turn around if people focus on these decent earnings if they come about.
Turning to emerging markets now, I assume this period of dollar strength hasn't in aggregate been particularly supportive. And I also saw last week that Chinese tech giant Tencent took quite a chunky hit to its share price. What was behind that move?
You're right that generally tighter dollar lending conditions are not good for emerging markets. Because a lot of emerging markets, a lot of countries, companies in emerging markets will borrow dollars, as that's the international financing, rather than their local currency. And then if the dollar yields are going up and the dollar strengthening, that's quite bad for people who borrow dollars. So absolutely, it's been a little bit weak. Not again, a bit like the conversation we had about sterling, about the UK. It's sort of general slight weakness, but no sort of panic, no big issues there. Mentioned Brazil actually a few weeks ago. That was in the crosshairs again, though. It's just a little bit of weakness. China, yeah, it hasn't had a brilliant last few weeks, but it's a slightly different story. There's the dollar funding conditions, but you mentioned this Tencent issue. So this is to do with various lists that the US puts out, various sort of sanctions, I suppose, investment restrictions that the US puts out on companies now and again in China, to do with technology, to do with links to the military. This particular one was the Department of Defense in the US adding a few companies, including Tencent, to a list of companies that have potentially ties to the Chinese military. No actual specific investment restrictions being put in place there. But just as an investor, particularly a foreign investor, you see these headlines and, you know, maybe it's better to act first and ask questions later. And Tencent, yeah, over 2 days last week, the share price fell about 10%. Maybe that's a buying opportunity if ultimately it's not put on any actual restriction list, but that's a call. That's a big call, isn't it? And it's another just a weight on investors' mind when they look at Chinese equities, even though they've underperformed over a period of time, relatively cheap. But you've got to bear this in mind, haven't you, going forward? And yeah, we've spoken a bit about Donald Trump, but I suspect President Trump, there won't be massive differences in terms of that friction that we've seen over a while between the US and China.
To round off our tour of the big asset classes, what's going on in commodities at the moment? I see that crude oil has ticked up a bit since the start of the year. Would you say that's been primarily supply or demand side led?
It's been quite a big move. For Brent oil, the index is up, the price index from this year to Monday's close is up nearly 9%. So it's quite a bit. Yesterday was up a fair chunk. And this is really to do with supply. So this just recently, again, the US has been announcing more constraints on Russian oil that has been getting into countries like China and India, just trying to stop that happening. So that reduces a little bit of supply, doesn't it? That would send the price up. There's also been quite a big move in natural gas prices in Europe. Been pretty cold, I know, in Europe, in the UK. So that leads to higher demand. And then on the supply side, again, Russia involved here, sort of reducing supply over the last few weeks. So that's been a big move up. And, you know, it always comes at the wrong time, doesn't it? We've been talking about inflation pressure, potentially what Donald Trump's going to do, growth being higher, yields going up. And of course, if these commodities, oil, natural gas, etc., start going up as well, that adds further pressure to inflation. So it's just come at the wrong time. It's nothing particularly aggressive, no massive shocks, but it's just another additional pressure, just like I said, perhaps at the wrong time.
So it's time for our number of the week. What have you got up your sleeve for our listeners today, Ben?
Well, I'm trying, maybe this is a little bit more of a positive angle. So the thing about yields going up means that, you know, potentially there's forward-looking better returns to be had, better yields to be had by definition. So my number of the week is 40 basis points, so 0.4%. That is the shape, that is the curve shape of the US Treasury market. So that's basically the difference between the 10-year yield and the 2-year yield. So that you get an extra 0.4% per year of yield by moving from a 2-year bond to a 10-year bond, so upward sloping. Why is that important? Well, 2 years ago, that curve was inverted. It was minus 1.1%. So in effect, the 10-year yield was 1.1% below the 2-year yield. So as an investor, you are paid just to take your money and stick it on a deposit, just keep it at, you know, 2-year, 1-year, even overnight deposits. They were much higher than 10-year yields. That was because we were worried, everyone was worried about a recession. So, you know, the Fed will be cutting interest rates in the future. As I mentioned before, they have cut, but maybe not as much as expected. So that curve has flipped and it's gone positive. So now as an investor, sitting on your deposits and sort of feeling all safe and secure, you're missing out potentially on higher yields by keeping it on deposits. You might start to be a little bit more attracted about those 10-year yields, the upward sloping curve, you know, higher yields, maybe add a little bit of credit. So, you know, the fall in bond price, the rise in yields, the slight weakness that we got, that, like I said, is offering a few opportunities, and it might start to see some of that money that's been sitting in cash, sitting in defensive assets, being redeployed into longer term assets, maybe, like I said, into credit assets. So a little bit of hope for you there at the end of this podcast.
A nice note to end the podcast on. Thanks as always, Ben, for taking the time to talk to me today. And thanks to all our listeners as well.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.